Cold Stove Podcast, cold open coming to you. I'm live from my living room, actually my dining room. Welcome back, NRD. Couple weeks off. We got a lot of stuff going on our full-time jobs. This is kind of a hobby that we both like to do, but we are back. We're talking hockey post-trade deadline. NRD, how are we doing on this Friday morning?
Beautiful Friday. It's great to be back. I'm glad to be back. I was going to kind of mix up those two sentences there as I shake off the rust of doing this podcast thing. But good Friday. The weather is nice in parts unknown. I know the weather's really nice down by you in Austin, Texas. It's a good golf tournament going on there right now.
You know, they're saying it's kind of a dreary morning out here, but they're saying a front's coming through in the afternoon. It's going to make the afternoon just gorgeous, about 85 and sunny. Looking forward to it. I will be out there watching golf shots.
Rub it in. Why don't you? Parts unknown. It's nice, but it's not that nice.
There you go. I do have a complaint, though. Our team, Lavaca Street Bar, got bounced last night. Semifinals of Beer League. Winter season. It was a hard fought game. 3-3 with about 5 minutes left in the third. They popped one on a turnover that I was not involved in. Rest assured. And then they popped an empty netter, and that was the game. So good season for the Lavaca Street team, and we'll get them in the summer. NRD, can't wait.
Get them back in the summer. That's all you can do.
It's tough. Good group of guys. Good locker room.
But you know what? The good thing is, I know you struggled with the injury bug. You finished the season healthy.
That's all I did. I had one stretch of the broken rib situation where I missed three or four games in a row, whatever that might have been. And then, finished the season pretty strong. Brought a pretty good hit pointer last night, though. There's the rink we play on. One of the rinks it's a sand base versus a concrete base.
Ooh.
Which
is the ice very soft?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so if there's any temperature fluctuation at all, and it's been humid and hot kind of for the first week this year in Austin, and the figure skating group is on right before us. So we get out there, and there is toe-picked ice all over the place. It's borderline dangerous. Like, we were complaining about it to the refs going in. I was like, hey, this is crazy.
I'll get the league to throw in, like, five or six. You know, everybody in the league throws in, like, $2 or $3, and then just tip off the Zamboni guy to do a dry cut before.
Honestly, like, it's crazy. And so guys are – and it's not just, like – it's not just grooves or whatever. It's like toe-picked ice that if you step on, I mean, you're going like face planting. And so I did that yesterday going towards the boards, like puck wrapped around the back of the net. And I'm going to basically pick it up, right?
Yeah.
Try to stop it on the boards. I hit a toe-pick ice and just boom, wipe, slide right toward the boards and like land on my hip. And I got a pretty good bruise coming in. That's for sure. But it's just like, man, it's dangerous. It's not how we should be playing playoff hockey. It's beer league hockey.
No, like, it's a serious thing. It is a serious thing.
There's some older fellas in the league too that aren't exactly going to take hard falls as good as the spry young buck that I am.
It's not and the Stanley Cup, but you also just don't want to get hurt out there.
Yeah, right. Rule number one of beer league hockey is like have fun, don't fight people. Rule number two is like don't get hurt. We all have health insurance that doesn't match the NHL's. Like,
yeah.
So, anyway, that's my rant on last night's unfortunate loss. But let's talk NHL now, shall we? We have to go back a couple weeks. We haven't done an episode since something happened that you may have been. Not necessarily prognosticating, but you were always involved with. And that is the Philadelphia Flyers and Chuck Fletcher officially no longer the general manager. I guess just a long saga, NRD, almost a years-long saga at this point of you basically being like, well, it's not necessarily an if, but it's a when. As the dust has settled here, your thoughts on kind of the journey that was the Chuck Fletcher decline in Philadelphia, and is there a certain degree of vindication for you?
For me, like, I would be lying if I didn't there somewhat of a – sorry, let me restart this. You don't even have to cut this. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say here. For me, there is somewhat of a vindication moment for me because I had been saying this for a year now, and you know, people doubt and people are like, when? Listen, it didn't happen back in December when we first reported this in the Cold Stove Pod. Whether you believe me or believe the next guy or whoever, Charlie O'Connor, who covers the Philadelphia Flyers for The Athletic, does a great job doing it, had said the similar thing that I had said in December. They were like this close, and I know you guys can't see how I'm recording, but my fingers are pinched. They were about this close to letting go of Chuck Fletcher in December after New Year's. They were just waiting for that next shoe to drop. And unfortunately, or fortunately for Chuck Fletcher's, you know, wallet, that shoe never dropped then. They kind of just fizzled into mediocrity. They went like 4-6, 5-5, you know, 3-2 in a stretch. And then like they never really got to that point where it got so bad that they needed to make a move for PR purposes. So Fletcher hung on a little bit more. You know, we had continued to talk about how Fletcher was going to be removed as general manager, potentially, you know, move himself up into president of hockey ops, but at least be gone from that post. And then I think some other things happened down the line, one of which the Ivan Provorov Pride incident. I don't think that Comcast Spectacor loved how that was handled by Chuck Fletcher in his post as president of hockey ops and general manager and all that. The second big thing, and probably more important than the Provorov thing, just listing moments that had happened down the line, the JVR / deadline fiasco. I don't really think that the Philadelphia Flyers expected to make any big moves at the deadline. I mean, Brendan Lemieux, good depth pickup for a rental. He fits into that, you know, Philly kind of him and Tony D'Angelo are going to have a field day out there kind of deal. But like they needed to move JVR because JVR is not going to re-sign in Philadelphia after this season. And unfortunately, what they did was they played hardball. They stuck to a high asking price on him. And now you're stuck with a guy who's going to leave in free agency. You're not going to have any asset. Like a seventh round pick, while it's not what JVR is worth, I mean, JVR is worth more than a seventh round pick. Case in point, a seventh round pick is worth more than nothing. So the fact that they weren't able to get any attainable asset for JVR, and they still have Provorov, a guy who they have sent out feelers on trading for 3 years now, and Travis Sanheim, and they have all these guys in the system in Philly where they've been, I guess, hesitant to make moves. And I think that's really where you could sum up the Chuck Fletcher saga, is that he didn't go through with pursuing Johnny Gaudreau. He didn't go through with, you know, making the JVR trade or shopping Ivan Provorov for real. Like everything was very hesitant. Everything was very half-assed. And I think that was the most damning straw that broke the camel's back. That's why Chuck Fletcher is no longer in the organization, period. And Danny Briere is the interim GM.
And you can't forget a guy like Rasmus Ristolainen, obviously.
Well, I see now that was a great contract. No, I'm just kidding.
If you're the Flyers, why do you let Chuck Fletcher, if you know what's going to happen, why do you let somebody like that be in charge of a trade deadline? You know, does that not make sense to either? Like, I just, if you're building this team for the future, maybe, or is that the final straw move? Like, that's it. You fucked this up. You have to be out.
Well, I think there were some front office politics at play. We know that the Philadelphia Flyers operate not in a weird way, but in an interesting way, and that they have an advisory board of hockey ops people, Paul Holmgren, Bobby Clark. Like, they have guys on this board that have a lot of influence, older veterans and legends of the organization that have a lot of influence on the way the organization operates. You have that faction in the front office. You have a new CEO. I think Dave Scott was the former CEO of, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers. He moves on to president of like Comcast Spectacor Sports or whatever, something like that. And then you bring in a new guy, name's escaping me right now, but they had a new CEO, a new leader at the top of the Philadelphia Flyers from the business side. And you have a guy in Danny Briere who was going to get a general manager's job one way or another in the National Hockey League, whether it was with the Philadelphia Flyers or somewhere else. I think there were a lot of this push and pull in the front office in Philly. When we were going to do it, how we were going to do it, is Fletcher going to keep his job as president of hockey ops? Is he gone completely? Do we want to buy out his contract, you know, in totality? I think there was a lot at play. And I think because that shoe never dropped in December, whether it's the right thing or the wrong thing, the easy thing for Dave Scott and co. in that Philadelphia front office was stay status quo, let Fletcher operate the deadline. He's already has his scouts. He has his pro scouts. He's got his app. I don't know if you saw that. He has an app that helps him make trades. Yeah, he said this in the town hall. He has an app. that, you know, he plugs into his phone and it tells him what each player is worth. So he's got his app, he's got his scouting department. I think it was easier, not necessarily the right decision, but the easiest decision to let him continue to operate at least through the deadline.
All right, so now that being said, deadline's done, Fletcher's out. If you're Philadelphia, what are the next steps as an organization? Are they comfortable with the rebuild word? Are they comfortable with the retool word? They're sitting like, what is it, seventh or eighth worst team in the league right now, so you're not necessarily in the Bedard sweepstakes. Like, what if you're Philadelphia and you're Danny Briere, what is your next move other than telling your idiot son to go fuck off and thanks for ruining my first month as a general manager?
Which was horrible, by the way. Kid's a shitbag.
Correct. Yes.
So what I would do is I would clean house. You know, unfortunately, the Philadelphia fan base is not the most tolerant and patient of all the fan bases out there. But that being said, I think you have to clean house, and that starts literally from the top of the line down. Kevin Hayes is probably not going to be a Philadelphia Flyer after the draft this year. My guess, he ends up in Columbus, as we talked about in the post-deadline episode here. I think he wants to go and play with Johnny Gaudreau. You know, Carter Hart, I think there's a good chance Carter Hart and Elliott and Marek have been saying this for a couple of weeks now, and I had heard similar. I think there's a good chance Carter Hart is not in the net for the Philadelphia Flyers. I think you have enough in the prospect pool where you're going to suck. I'm not going to say you're not going to suck, but you have the opportunity to get these younger guys like Cam York, like Bobby Brink, opportunities. Owen Tippett, I think, is one of those guys that you keep in the system. Like, I think they have enough guys there that I'm not saying you're going to be a good team. You're going to be a basement dweller, but you have the opportunity now to get rid of the JVRs and the Kevin Hayeses and the, like, I don't think Brendan Lemieux is going to stick, or Tony D'Angelo off the blue line, and have those younger guys have those opportunities to play. Zamula is another one that they have there. So I think that's what time it is for the Philadelphia Flyers. The problem is that the John Tortorella problem, right? They have Tortorella. Is Tortorella going to be the coach that wants to do that? And you owe him way too much money to fire him at this point.
And the answer is no, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense. The direction, like, did they think this was a Stanley Cup roster, that it was a John Tortorella away from taking this team deep into the playoffs? Like, that's why it's such a clusterfuck, because you have the wrong coach for a rebuild or retool. You have the wrong roster for a rebuild and retool. There's a bunch of guys on here that have extremely long-term contracts that represent your core that did not go anywhere but down. And now you have a new GM trying to pick up the pieces and figure it out. So that's why it feels like there's a battle of three or four different paths within the organization. And that's a recipe for disaster, right? Or mediocrity, which is almost worst. Like, that's kind of if you finish 11th or 12th worst in the league, you're not making the playoffs. You don't really have a good shot of making the playoffs, and you're not getting the high draft picks, because we know that in the NHL, not necessarily like other sports, the draft pick, like, wins above replacement, goes very high at number one and kind of immediately shoots down in an exponential way. So you got to do something drastic, whether it is loading this team up with free agents and trying, like, kind of a transfer portal approach, the Lane Kiffin Ole Miss football approach, or you go Arizona with it and have 34 first and second round draft picks in the next 3 years. Like, that's, and I don't even know if you can get that, because I do too, but you have no leverage. I mean, you're trading contracts that are crazy. Trevor Sanheim,
Carter Hart will bring in enough. I think the goalie market will pick up this offseason.
I hope so. Let me ask you this. Of the guys who've battled the injury bug this year, Couturier, mm-hmm. Cam Atkinson's hurt, Travis Konecny's hurt, Ryan Ellis, all of them signed extremely long-term. Do any of those four players play for the Philadelphia Flyers next year?
Ryan Ellis certainly doesn't. Has he even played a game for the Philadelphia Flyers? I mean,
he's hurt.
He's right? Hurt, right? And I'm not trying to beat up on him. Let me be clear. I'm beating up on Chuck Fletcher and what a disaster of a trade that was at the time. I mean, they had interest in him for years. They finally get it done just a little too late in, you know, Ryan Ellis' career. Couturier strikes me a lot as a Claude Giroux, where it's like, will they move him? I think they'll do what's best by him, because I think he's given enough to that organization. But guys like Konecny, Cam Atkinson, like, they're not bad players. Cam Atkinson, you put Cam Atkinson on the second or third line on any of these playoff teams, I think that's probably the best jolt you can give any team including Boston, in the National Hockey League going into the playoffs. Like, Cam Atkinson's a great player. But because of those contracts and because of the window now that you're going to enter, if you're going to rebuild this thing, that window does not mesh with Cam Atkinson. It does not mesh with Travis Konechny. So if you're going to commit to tearing this down, you are going to have to make some tough decisions if you're Danny Briere. And I think, you know, not that I don't think Danny Briere is capable, because I think he deserves this opportunity, but I think that's part of the reason why Danny Briere is just the interim general manager right now. And they're still committed to at least interviewing, you know, candidates in the offseason. Because I don't even think they know who the right man is to, or woman for that matter, the right man or woman to do this job right now in Philadelphia, because there's going to have to be a lot of tough decisions made.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That's the last thing I wanted to touch on before we jump off the Flyers, is what is the job security of Danny Briere? And is he a figurehead, or are they seriously considering keeping him on board based on what he's brought to the organization?
So people from outside the organization, friends of Danny Briere, if you will, I'll let you guys kind of speculate and figure that out, have reached out to Danny Briere, looking to get involved in that front office in Philly, want to contribute, want to help former Flyers players, to be more specific. And right now, Danny Briere is kind of putting them in a holding pattern, saying, you know, I don't have that authority to start just bringing in a front office yet. You know, hopefully at the end of the season, I get named permanent general manager and we can have those conversations. I'm not adverse to it, but right now I'm still the interim general manager and I can't do that at this time. So I think that's where we're at right now. I think Danny Briere expects the position to be appointed to him, but right now nothing is guaranteed. And I don't know, for a team that is as tumultuous and volatile and a front office that is as volatile as Philadelphia, I don't know how you lock anything up as a guarantee right now. Things could change by the minute with the way they operate.
Who is that? Would that be a Comcast call, or would that be whatever the Dave Scott, like?
Well, yeah. So that would be like Comcast and Dave Scott. I think Dave Scott and the new CEO that they brought in and Comcast, and again, that hockey board of advisors, if they don't clean house there, like, that's why I think Philadelphia has too many cooks. And that's a longer discussion as we try to move on from this topic on the show. And we can maybe have that discussion on a future episode. I think there's too many cooks in the kitchen in Philadelphia, and that's part of the problem. But to answer your question, I think it's a holding pattern with Danny Briere. I think the expectation is he gets that job permanently, but you never say anything in totality with this organization.
Totally makes sense. You know what else makes sense, NRD, is our friends over at Shopify. They are just as solid and helpful of a service as there is, because they help companies grow. Shopify makes a little cha-ching sound whenever you make a sale, NRD, and you should know that means that another business dream has become a reality. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're selling jerseys, whether you're selling t-shirts, whether you're selling pants, hats, hoodies, you name it, Shopify simplifies selling online and in person so you can focus on successfully growing your business. Shopify covers every sales channel, from an in-person point-of-sale system to an all-in-one e-commerce platform. It even lets you sell across social media marketplaces like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. It's packed with industry-leading tools ready to ignite your growth. And Shopify gives you complete control over your business and your brand without having to learn any new skills in design or code. And thanks to 24/7 help and an extensive business course library, Shopify is there to support your success every step of the way. NRD, Washed Media, you're familiar with it. We are a Shopify platform. Any merch that we sell, it's going through the Shopify system. Plus, my favorite part of this whole thing, when you put up a new t-shirt, maybe a new hoodie, maybe a new polo, and you promote it via social media or wherever, you get to see where the little dots come in on the live map. And it is just intoxicating to watch those little nationwide dots pop up all over the place. It's a lot of fun. So now it's your turn to get serious about selling whatever product you want to try to sell, and try Shopify today. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/stove, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/stove to take your business to the next level today. shopify.com/stove. NRD, let's go. Let's do some playoff talk, shall we?
Go for it.
As the current standings say it's Carolina, New Jersey, New York, Boston, Toronto, Tampa, Islanders, Pittsburgh holding down the top two wildcard spots in the East. Out West, Dallas, Minnesota, Colorado, Vegas, Los Angeles, Edmonton, and Seattle, and Winnipeg basically holding down the West wildcard spots. Nashville kind of in the chase, Calgary kind of in the chase in the West, and then the East wild card obviously has been a talk of the town for the longest time. Florida, Washington, Ottawa, and I will officially, even though they're not mathematically eliminated, I will say the Sabres are on the outside looking in. What has intrigued you about this playoff race so far? Give or take 10 games remaining for every team across the league. Where do you want to start?
Well, I think there are two divisional battles out, you know, one in the Metro, one in the Pacific, that I think changed the way certain teams' playoff hopes and aspirations go based on the matchups.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that the Carol, how about New Jersey?
Yeah.
Could potentially win the Metro. I don't think any of us would have maybe said they were a little, it's time for New Jersey to be a playoff team. I think we all kind of said that. Or it was Lindy Ruff's head on the line. But for them to win the Metro in a division with Carolina, New York, and the rest, didn't see that coming.
Did not. And then,
nor did I see Boston. That Boston's definitely my worst take of all time. I was like, yeah. Oh, they're getting old, and then they have potentially the best season of all time. So I'm gonna wear that one. I apologize to my Boston friends out there.
It's all right. You know, still batting 750 in my book.
I'll take it.
No, I think you hit the nail on the head in the Metro. I think New Jersey potentially being able to pass Carolina for the number one seed in that division is huge. I think it changes the playoff path for so many teams. I think it changes the playoff path for New Jersey. I think it changes the path for the New York Rangers and the Carolina Hurricanes. I think that series is going to be an absolute war if that happens in the first round. Whereas, you know, not saying the Devils-Rangers wouldn't be a great series. I think it'd be a fantastic series for the league, for marketing, for, you know, the rivalry and everything. But that's a very high-flying top six versus top six. I think the Devils and the Rangers have put up a ton of goals, battle it out kind of deal. Whereas, like, Rangers-Carolina in the first round, those two teams might have a similar series the last year, beat the shit out of each other, and one team's going to be standing in the end, maybe a little bit scratched and bruised. Whereas New Jersey now, if they win that division, they're playing Pittsburgh, potentially yeah. The Islanders. Potentially Florida, which, I mean, Florida's been great lately. I don't want to discredit Florida, but it's a much easier time out of the first round, in my opinion, for New Jersey than it is playing the New York Rangers. I think that changes totally a lot of things there. And then if you look out west, I think the same thing's going to happen in the Pacific. I think the Kings win the Pacific. They're 4 points back of Vegas right now. They have a game in hand. I do think LA ends up passing the Vegas Golden Knights for the Pacific Division crown, which sets up Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers versus Jack Eichel and the Vegas Golden Knights in the first.
Who? Who?
Jack Eichel. He still plays.
Oh, yeah. That guy, Jack. Yeah, I agree. I think that this, you know, exciting time of year, maybe not the, you know, things kind of feel a little set out west, but except for those divisional battles that you mentioned. Things kind of feel set out east. I give Florida obviously some chance there, but they're on a bit of a skid, losing two in a row. So we'll see. I think we'll have a more comprehensive playoff breakdown for you. But one of the teams I did mention was Buffalo. All I wanted to say here was that it's kind of disgusting the way they've fallen apart from a point of optimism to a point of like same old Sabres. And now the fan base is Sabres Twitter is in flames, obviously, because it's more the same, right? But there is the great white hope in Devin Levi, who is now a Buffalo Sabre after a contentious week of will he, won't he, will they, won't they, after Northeastern was bounced from the Hockey East tournament. Kind of a weird scenario there. I heard from a buddy that Kevin Adams was in Boston. So he must have flown from the GM meeting to Boston to try to personalize this thing a little bit, because by all accounts, Devin Levi is a very cerebral person, a very calculated person, and had multiple options on the table, whether that was returning to school, whether that was holding out entirely. I think for a seventh round pick. I don't know if it was Elliot or Jeff or somebody mentioned that his contract looks much more like a first or second rounder based on his incentives and bonuses that he can hit and guaranteed money and then things of that nature. So I think, you know, Devin Levi, to his credit, played a little hardball here, and he could, because he knew the position the Sabres were in. And as they have very much proven the last two or three, four games, goaltending is an issue. And, you know, it's funny when you look at the best team in the league, the Boston Bruins and Linus Ullmark, and how they had a Vezina caliber goalie with a crap team in front. So it's just, goalies are funny and crazy. And this whole rant or this whole me opining on a random topic is just to say, I'm excited for the Devin Levi era of the Buffalo Sabres. Whenever that begins, I would expect it to begin at some point this season. He's officially on the ice taking shots in practice. Always a good sign. I don't think they'll rush him by any means, but we'll see in the Devin Levi era. Do you have any Devin Levi thoughts before we bounce around?
No, I'll be honest with you. I'm not 100% privy to the contract. I hope they don't burn a year of his ELC this year. Like, if you're going to keep him and you're going to put him on the roster this year and you really have nothing to lose, because like you said, they're not mathematically out of it, but the chance of them making it at this point are very slim. And let's say, I think the number, I don't know if it applies here, but the number is usually 9 games to burn the ELC. And fucking start him for 9 games. Fucking start him for the last 9 games of the season. That's what I would do. I mean, really, like, see what you got. Like, I don't think there's a purpose to be had playing this kid in, like, 2 or 3 games from here on out. Like, just play him, you know? He's there. He's healthy. He's able. Play him.
I don't disagree. if I'm the Sabres, I do what I – right. Like, if I'm the Sabres, I obviously do what I can to not burn a year.
Correct. That's option one. Option two.
And if I'm Devin Levi, I am absolutely burning a year, because that's – the one leverage piece.
You're closer to free agency, yeah.
And that's what I'm wondering, if that was the hang up in getting him to Buffalo. Not that it was only a week long, so it wasn't the end of the world hang up, but there was a ticking clock, because if you are going to get there and burn something, you need to get there. So that was Devin Levi's clock. If you're the Sabres, you want him to sign, because it's either sign now and burn or potentially lose him and Eric Portillo it and get a third round draft pick for him, you know. So I'm curious as to the last, I think it's 12 games now of the Sabre season, what their thing is. And now let me ask you this. I don't know this. If he backs up a goalie and is on the bench, does that count as a game? Does he have to see the ice?
See, it might be different for goaltenders.
I don't know, because it's like,
I'm not 100% sure. If it does, again, to that point, there's no reason to have him backing up. Like, he's either go paper transaction and put him in Rochester for like a day, and then like, don't burn it to leave him on the bench, just play him. But I'm not 100% sure. What I can do is I will tweet Puckopedia or Cat Friendly for you right after the show and find out for certain.
That's why you're the man. We'll see. We'll see what happens to Devin Levi. They have some games to play with. I don't think they're a playoff team. They've shown in the last week that they're not a playoff team. And it's sad. It really is sad. The Jordan Greenway trade has not exactly panned out the way people thought it might from what he brings. And I'm not shocked by that. I'm not shocked by the locker room switch up there. I know they're dinged up. I know Alex Tuch is playing through an injury. I know Rasmus Dahlin is playing through an injury. It's just not their year. They're not there yet. They're a piece or two away, perhaps a Brock Besser away. We'll see on the Buffalo Sabres. Connor McDavid made an interesting comment, and we've talked about this in the past, where he said, it's kind of fun to see Shohei Ohtani go head-to-head against Mike Trout playing for their country. Would it not be fun to see Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews going head-to-head playing for their country in some sort of best-on-best situation? So I want to preface that we've obviously broached this topic before. Yes, we want a best-on-best tournament. Yes, we want it in a time of year where it can be hyper-competitive. Mm-hmm. And yes, we don't want anybody to get hurt significantly so it impacts their chances of a Stanley Cup run. Your thoughts on the World Baseball Classic real quick, NRD, and how that might translate to a World Cup of hockey.
I love the WBC to the point of guys getting hurt for the season. You know, unfortunately, with the New York Mets, Edwin Diaz, I think it was a torn patella tendon, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And some ACL.
Celebrating, by the way.
Celebrating. So
not pitching, not so like there's a whole other element to this.
Yeah.
Altuve is a little different. Altuve gets hit by a pitch. He's out for 2 months. That sucks. But Diaz was celebrating. Diaz could have been on a jet ski. Diaz could have been on a horse. Diaz, you know, like it's almost a separate category, in my opinion.
I don't think like such a freak thing, like you said, that happened. I don't think that really has any relevancy to how good the tournament was or is, or why they should do it again, and why every sport really outside of football. I think it's the one sport that maybe you're never going to see best on best. Maybe the NBA, but then you got a lot of European influence like Luka and those guys now in the NBA. So maybe you could do it in the NBA too. But the tournament was excellent. Being able to see the best player, probably the best player to ever play baseball in Shohei Ohtani, go up against Mike Trout, the best American-born player probably in the history of the game, I think was just
awesome. I mean, you could make some arguments there, but
One of the best American-born
players. That's
fair. We don't have to do this as a hockey podcast. Remember, Colts still have a hockey podcast presented by Wash Media. But can we clarify that Shohei Ohtani is probably the most gifted human to ever touch a baseball, right?
Yes.
I don't think anybody comes close. Yeah, he's the best baseball player of all time.
Yeah, he throws 102 miles an hour, hits balls 500 feet, and runs like a deer.
Yeah, I'm not here for the Babe Ruth argument. You know,
Shohei Ohtani in the 1927 season would have 100 home runs and 1,000 RBI.
Unheard
of.
Ohtani's the most gifted human to ever touch a baseball bat or a baseball. So that being settled and the Mike Trout thing aside, it was awesome to see best on best. As far as how it applies to the National Hockey League, I think the timing of it is so, so, so important to this because the players would much prefer to not get hurt and ruin their NHL season. They want to play it after the Stanley Cup in the offseason. Problem with that is, fans won't give as much of a shit in the offseason as they would midseason.
Yep.
I really think the best time to do this is just to mimic the Olympics and play it in February. I don't think any GM or owner would agree to that. Well, maybe not so much owner because, you know, looking into the Edwin Diaz thing, the MLB had insurance on the players. So the teams are not on the books for those contracts of Altuve or Diaz while they're hurt. So maybe if there was similar protection there and insurance in the National Hockey League, the owners wouldn't care as much, but at least general managers and coaches would. They would not be happy with playing this in February and having a guy get hurt. And if you play it in the preseason, is the product on ice the best quality because they're rusty and that's like their warm-up? So like I think there are legitimate cons to each, you know, preseason, postseason, middle of the season. I think the best option for everybody when you really split hairs and get down to it is that February break because you're giving teams a bye week now in the CBA. Each team gets a 1 week bye week. You have the All-Star break, which nobody really cares about anymore. Why not make this best on best tournament every 3 or 4 years, run the All-Star break in the 2 years that it's not going on, or the 2 or 3 off years of this tournament, run it in February. Teams get their bye weeks continuously throughout the month. Players, you know, not every team is losing everybody. You know, there's going to be a roster, maybe a couple of guys from the Maple Leafs, a couple of guys from this team, the Bruins, but run it like that. I think that's the best way to do it. You get to see best on best hockey. And these guys, I mean, for the most part, we've seen now in the league that these guys are very skillful and they're able to kind of police themselves. They're able to play a game where they won't get as hurt. I mean, freak things still happen. There are these, you know, plays where two guys are going up against the wall, like to chase down an icing and something happened. Like for the most part, these guys are so skillful and so on top of their game that they're able to police themselves. And it's not like we got a bunch of Marty McSorley's running around anymore. Whereas you play in the world, you know, the World Hockey Classic or the World Cup of Hockey, whatever you want to call it, in the middle of the season, I think, knock on wood, I don't know if you can hear, I'm knocking on wood, I think you could come out of that tournament unscathed for the most part.
I would tend to agree, right? Like hockey is not an inherently, I was going to say injury prone. Obviously, guys get banged up and dinged. To me, there are very few, really, really grueling ACL tears, right? Like, I think things compound and guys have a bad back that all of a sudden compounds and then they slip a disc and they're done for the year. Concussions, done for an extended period of time. But hockey doesn't necessarily have the degree of a football or a baseball where, you know, pitchers tear something and they're out for a long time. And maybe that's part of the, you know, hockey players playing through things. Like you pull a groin, you probably should be out for 4 weeks. They come back after 2.5 type of thing. So don't chirp me in the comments for saying hockey players don't get hurt. I realize it happens. I'm saying that's usually if you have an injury, even a significant one, it's a 3 to 4 week timetable versus ACL, UCL, MCL tears in football and baseball specifically. And even basketball, it's kind of like the same thing, sprained ankle, right? Probably the most common basketball injury. As outside of the foot stuff, plantar fasciitis, like that, that's almost bad luck. But a high ankle sprain, 4 to 6 weeks, that's kind of a pretty good mirror of what happens in hockey a lot of the time with bad injuries that are not the extended grade 3 concussion or whatever it might be. But well, all that is to say is, go ahead.
No, let me ask you this then to that point, right? Like 2014 Olympics, John Tavares tears his MCL and meniscus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
In the 2014.
Oh, yeah. It's awful.
Horrible. Not downplaying the impact that may have had to the New York Islanders. I mean, I would have to put myself back in the mindset and have to go read up on where they were at that time in 2014. I don't think we still look at that as like, oh my God, that's horrible. That's why we should, like, we're praying to have NHLers back in the Olympics. It wasn't the devastating blow to having players playing a best-on-best midseason tournament that some may have thought it would be. We're right, you know, maybe the sting of it, like I said, I'd have to put myself back in 2014 to remember what the discourse was at the time. But, like, maybe the sting of it, especially in New York with Islanders fans, was loud and there was an outrage. But it kind of dissipated to the point where now, like, let's do it again. Let's have players in the Olympics. So, At very worst, I still don't think, you know, I'm not downplaying the injury to Tavares or the New York Islanders or anything like that. But like at the very worst, it's still not this ground shaking monumental thing. If a player happens to get hurt on a free play in a midseason tournament, I don't think it detracts from what it could do for the game, both internationally, both domestically, with the TV partners, with the social, you know, conversation. Like, I don't think that one person is bigger than the game. And I know it really sounds like, I'm not trying to be like that with that take. I know I want to kind of refine this, so maybe you can help me out after I'm done digging.
No, I get it. I totally get it.
Like, one injury is not going to detract from how great, you know, it would be for the game and how much these players want to represent their countries and play in this tournament.
Yeah, players want this, and players would be, what they don't want is some gimmicky all-star weekend where they're throwing pucks at dolphins jumping out of water. Like, they don't want that. They want an opportunity to say, we are the best country on the planet at playing this game with our best guys against your best guys. Let's go have a tussle, right? Like, they want that opportunity. And if players want that, that means that the competitiveness will show through in the product on the ice. Once you have a good product on the ice, me as a marketer says, that's a moneymaker. We can sell that. Once you can sell that, and you inject money into the conversation, now we're looking at a product for the NHL, for the teams, for the owners, for the leagues, and not just the NHL. This is the Danish league, and this is the Swedish league, and this is the KHL. There are plenty of options for people to make money, and that's money's trying to the great equalizer here. Where the World Baseball Classic, I think, has had issues in the past, and where the Pro Bowl has had issues in the past, is the players have not been motivated. Now, this year, we saw it a little bit differently. Some of the players on teams, especially the international teams in the World Baseball Classic, this is like their Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And they, some of the was it Team Puerto Rico or the Dominican Republic that were like, we'd rather win this than a World Series.
Yep.
And so when you start to see that motivation, you start to see that product on the field, and it's not a joke, it's not a gimmick, it's not a scrimmage, it's not an exhibition. You see the social conversation, you see the Twitter clips, you see like there's a palpable wave this year that the World Baseball Classic had that it did not in the past. I never missed the World Baseball Classic before, you know, this year. Now I'm like, wow, that would be fun to do again. and I was not right, and I was not necessarily a huge believer in it. But now once you get players, once the player motivation reaches a fever pitch, which I think the NHL is at a point where they're the players want best on best more than anybody, you can exploit it, for lack of a better term, financially, so that everybody gets a big enough piece of the pie that they're made whole by it. So if the owners, I don't care if you're an owner and John Tavares gets hurt in the future World Cup of hockey, if you're getting it a check for $140 million because of some TV revenue split for this thing, guess what? You're a money hungry D-bag to begin with. So now all of a sudden that injury.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Does it really bother?
And so now to your point about when to do this, pre, post, mid, I don't know. I don't have a perfect answer. My only answer, based purely off like vibes, is that the Northern Hemisphere is a winter hockey, you know, vibe. I feel like for whatever reason, this may be totally wrong, but I'm going to feel more like watching hockey when it's 20 degrees outside and snowing than middle of July. Now I get the middle of July thing because there's literally nothing going on in the sports world other than like dog days of baseball after the All-Star break. But can you really decide that's when we're going to do it? Now that's when soccer does it. That's when they do the Euros. That's when they do the World Cup. If it's not in a corrupt, you know, Middle Eastern country,
that, it's 145 degrees.
So I don't know when you do it. I tend to agree with you that I think the most appealing as a viewer and the most like makes sense from a vibe standpoint would be that mid-season Olympic break like they always have. Start the season a little bit earlier. I know you have to compete with football, but that's a whole other story for a whole other day. And then you go into the May-June time frame with the playoffs. That's also another story for another day. I think the NHL sacrifices some viewership because of summer and whatever. We're talking international stuff right now. I love the way the World Juniors does it. They own the week between Christmas and New Year's. Great, what great way to do it. I don't think the NHL guys would sign up for that because it's holidays and families and whatnot. But if you're 19 years old, yeah, I want to go play on ESPN or NHL Network. I can deal with the family stuff in my future, right? So I don't know when the best time to put it is. I think it's February. I think you build in insurance for teams. I think you build in, like there used to be, I think you build in the youth team, the U23, or Team North America, whatever you want to call it. Or you can even have Team World, Team Young Guys World, however you want to do it. But I think we need it as a sport. I think we need a tournament that can get a casual, you know, watch media guys, perfect example, hockey curious, hockey adjacent. They'll watch some playoff games and that's about it. But they would watch the heck out of that tournament. Oh, anytime you throw the USA on a sweater, I'm more inclined to watch. The sport, pickleball.
You just nailed my next point and my last point on this, and you just hit it right on the head. Baseball diehards knew that Shohei Ohtani was the most popular player, most marketable player in baseball. Now the entire world knows that Shohei Ohtani is one of the most, not only marketable baseball players, but most marketable athletes in the world. And it is solely attributed to this tournament that just went down, the World Baseball Classic. You know who has a very talented, probably one of the most gifted athletes of all time in their sport? Hockey. His name is Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid is the most marketable and popular hockey player to hockey diehards. How about time to make Connor McDavid one of the most marketable and popular athletes in the world, period, not just hockey?
Bingo. And if you're ESPN, do you not have a crazy incentive to do whatever you can to grease the skids on an international tournament because you own hockey rights for the next 5 or 6 years, however long is left on their deal?
Hell yeah.
You want, you know, tens of millions of people to watch the U.S.-Canada semifinal game, and all of a sudden you rose like Tage Thompson. You raise his profile, Jack Eichel, the Hughes guys, Austin Matthews. Like, imagine if ESPN, you get those guys to be on the same level as kind of mid-tier basketball players. Like, because they're not right now. They're not. They're just the best players in the NHL are not as marketable as the 60th guy in the NBA. And that's a shame when they could be. But, you know, there's just so many things that make sense to make it happen. It doesn't feel like it feels like the owners and the league are the biggest feet draggers on this whole thing. And we see that play out in person with the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And what is their incentive to say we're going to build this state-of-the-art, from scratch, best-on-best tournament? My argument would be long-term financial and growth of the game
for the league,
benefits. They're saying, but my short-term incentive, it doesn't. They don't equate, right? So if your short-term incentive is here because the risk of injury is so high, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. in their opinion, they're saying, how can we be made whole? And now it's short-term financial, maybe. And maybe that's where a TV contract comes in and say, hey, we're going to build this state-of-the-art tournament. It's going to be on a network television, you know, CBS,
sell it as NBC, a separate entity. You don't have to play the World Hockey Classic. Where I keep calling it World Cup of Hockey is what it should be called. I don't know. Baseball's tripping me up. You don't have to play the World Cup of Hockey on ESPN or Turner. You can.
No.
Have them bid against Fox, who was interested in the NHL contract. Have them bid mm-hmm. against Viacom and CBS. Have them place that as an entity and an IP that they can sell to any network out there. I don't care if goddamn HGTV wants to buy it. Sell the product as a separate entity. Get rid of the old world mentality when it comes to media in this game. And to the last thing about, like you said, you know, watch media, hockey adjacent, hockey casual, hockey curious, being interested when that USA sweater is on.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not making this up, if I don't recall this from a fever dream, when TJ Oshie went 9 rounds in the shootout against Russia in Sochi, he was on Access Hollywood the next morning or at the next day. He was on Access
Good
Hollywood.
Morning.
He was on
Access. Yes.
No, good morning. TJ Oshie, we're talking about a guy who is a great hockey player, and we know him as one of the more, you know, the veteran premier players in the league, but nobody gives a shit about TJ Oshie in the grand scheme of things. People gave a shit about TJ Oshie because he represented the country. He represented something that was bigger than hockey. It was more so international sport and whatnot. So to that point, I think the interest goes way up. And like I said, sell the thing as a separate entity, sell it off to the highest bidder, and let's roll and let's have a tournament in February.
My only stipulation on selling it to the highest bidder, I'm afraid if somebody like Amazon or Apple TV or some, you know, a streaming platform picks it up, my concern is that the hockey casual fan will not partake. Because
so
then you'll
have a stipulation that if Amazon an Amazon or an Apple comes in and buys it, then you fall back on your current league TV partners like Turner, ESPN to make nice with Apple and Amazon, and you're going to air some games on them. Let's say Apple's going to give you, I'm just throwing out numbers, just round numbers. Say Apple's going to give you $100 million for the tournament. I know it's worth more than that. I'm just round numbers for the sake of round numbers. Apple's giving you $100 million. Well, okay, $100 million's not bad for a two-week tournament. I think, you know, now this will never happen because everybody's so money hungry and, you know, like you said, the D-bag owners, but $100 million is enough to wet my beak. So ESPN, mm-hmm. since Apple has the tournament, we're going to give you a couple of these games to have on network television. Maybe just pay for the production cost, pay for whatever, you know, take that off the league's hands. That is the mm-hmm. stipulation where I could see them solving that. Whereas if a streaming giant comes in and buys this tournament, then ESPN or Turner gets like first right of refusal to just air the games, right? And they just handle production costs.
Yeah, it has to be something like that because what I think you need is the casual, call it middle-aged, 50-year-old, diehard Dallas Cowboys fan who lives in the suburbs of Dallas. He will flip through his little TV guide thing because they still do that mm-hmm. at that age, and he sees USA versus Sweden hockey. Oh, okay, click. And you need to have that sort of viewer and mm-hmm. ESPN hammering this thing home every night. You need to have ABC doing a special on it. You need to have a 24/7. Maybe if you want to sell a 24/7 series to the streaming networks.
Yeah.
Totally, totally cool with that. Because then you create a property for the hockey hardo to go seek it out. I just don't want a casual or hockey adjacent or hockey curious fan to have to go seek this out. This needs to be on at bars. This needs to be on at restaurants. This needs to be on in living rooms of middle America and coastal America and red and blue America. Like, you need to fit the best sport in the world to an audience that is sort of always going to have hockey in their kind of the background, being one of the four big sports, but does not create like content ergonomics, does not create an impediment to go. They can't go find it. It needs to come to them. And I think that's the most important thing for a tournament like this. And that's why I think the World Juniors could do better than having it on NHL Network all the time. Like, that needs to be an NBC property, a CBS property, an ESPN property, even a Turner, even TNT. Like, it has to be on cable or network television for this thing to work still. Granted, those numbers are dipping, right? Every year, streaming increases and it goes like this. Right? I'm putting up the X right now. Des Bryant style. But it still needs to have that impact for a hockey curious 8-year-old and a hockey curious 58-year-old who need exposure to a best on best tournament that will then ignite their interest in their local team, be that Dallas or Nashville or Miami or Anaheim, like the kind of the Sun Belty teams that don't have built in diehard fan bases that you kind of have to work for every new eyeball. That's what this tournament would be for.
I agree.
And all of a sudden, Jason Robertson wins a gold medal for USA in a best on best tournament. And he has 30 million new fans across Texas in the South. Boom. So, goodness, that's a long time to talk about international hockey. But I think it's an important discussion to have. And I think it's fun to sort of pie in the sky it, because there is a solution there somewhere.
I think we have the solution.
Yeah.
If I say so myself, if I'm a little selfish, I think Cold Stove has figured it out.
I think we have. That's worth a long form blog on Washed Media that we can tandem write, make your debut on the site from editorial's perspective. But anyway,
I don't hate that idea. We'll offline about that.
Couple more things on sort of the business of hockey while we're at it. The Ottawa Senators sale price reported in the neighborhood of $800 million. That'd be a win for basically everybody involved. Obviously, Ryan Reynolds still involved in this, selling his Mint Mobile for $1 billion. Good for him. Happy for him. He needed it, right? He needed that win. Your thoughts on the Senators sale price and potential going forward there?
Yeah, I mean, they're good for the Melnick family. Made a lot of money off that investment. Cool. Happy for them. I think Ryan Reynolds should be involved in whatever group. There was rumors of a different tech guy getting involved and had his own plans for everything. I don't really know what's happening with that. I'm always like wiggy when it comes to like tech guy out of nowhere with a startup tech firm. And, you know, he does all this and it's not really anything concrete. Maybe that's a dinosaur take, but I'm not always convinced by the new money of a guy that I never heard of that just has $15 billion to just throw around. It's a little sus, but, we'll see. I think Ryan Reynolds will be involved with whatever group, though, gets that team.
I hope so as well. I think so, too. Yeah, whatever group it may be, I think he'll have a part, because I think it makes sense for any group to have Ryan Reynolds involved. Gary Bettman saying that, one, the playoffs are perfect as they are, and two, perfect as they are, and everybody likes them. And two, leaving the door open for the cap potentially to go back up over $1 million this offseason after saying it's probably going to go up, what was it, 3 to 4, whatever, earlier, then dialing it back to $1 million. Your thoughts on the Gary Bettman business of hockey over the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, Gary Bettman said some interesting things. The playoff structure is fine. The cap can go up if the players pay back all their escrow. I don't think that's going to happen. My guess is that Marty Walsh is going to come in, probably not try to enact.
Hold on. Is it Marty Walsh? Is it Marty Walsh, dude?
Oh, fucking Marty Walsh. Marty Walsh is going to come in. I don't think he's going to enact major change as the new guy on the block. New townie, as they'd call him. But I think that he'll talk to the players. I think what will happen is the cap will raise. I think they'll probably, my guess is, negotiate to come up with a little bit more of an escalator than the $1 million. Maybe say it goes up to $2.5 million, and they pay back a little bit of the escrow, perhaps. Yeah. I think that I could see. I don't think it's going to be paid back in full. I don't think we're going to see that massive cap jump right now. Playoff situation, I think, is a mess. I think it needs to be fixed. We spent a lot of time on international hockey. Maybe in the next episode, we talk about the playoffs and how we could fix that. Bettman is Bettman's Gary Bettman. Shout out to Biz. He had some choice words to say about Gary Bettman this week that caught fire. And
it's Gary's time. He built the league into the 21st century. Hand the reins over to somebody who's equipped for the next 20 years.
It would be Bill Daly.
Yeah. And so, hey, Gary, great job. You still have hockey in Arizona. Let's move on. It's time.
Although I do think, really quick on the Arizona thing, I don't think I've seen anything more pathetic than they have the mascot, the Howler the Coyote mascot Twitter account, tweeting out, like, remember on May, whatever, for the referendum. I just think it's adorable seeing the Coyote mascot holding up like a sign that says vote. It's kind of pathetic. And this team needs to be in Austin or Houston tomorrow or Atlanta.
Speaking of business of hockey, Kevin Weitz tweeting out the skyline of Houston after tweeting out the skyline of Atlanta. John Buchidross chirping kind of on both fronts saying, these are options. Anything more on the Quebec, Kansas City, Houston, Atlanta, Austin? Perhaps front.
I mean,
as far as expansion would go,
we're gonna get a team in Austin, whether it's an NHL team. If we have to buy an ECHL team or an SPHL team to put them in Boston, I think, Brett, that's what we have to do.
Bring back the Ice Bats.
There you go, Austin Ice Bats. Let's go. We call them the Coyotes. I think we, by principle, now we have to call them the Austin Coyotes, whether they're an NHL club or not. Listen, Houston and Atlanta, from all that I know and what I had said in that post-deadline episode that we did here, they are viable options, and I think it's a matter of when, not if. Now, Bettman will sit there and say that they're not in the expansion business. It's not something that they're considering at this time. And maybe that's right. That's not something they're considering, when did he speak last week? March 12th, 2023. Maybe that's not something they're actively considering in that moment. But there will be an NHL club in Atlanta by the end of the Turner Sports contract, and there will be an NHL club in Houston, maybe sooner, perhaps, if, this vote fails. Because I think what's going on and the reason why you're seeing these rumors pop up is because I think the league wants another Winnipeg-Atlanta situation, whereas if things don't come through in Arizona, I don't think they want to leave that team in limbo for a year. I think they want to move them ASAP and bring them in, probably to Houston. I think the Atlanta thing's tougher because you have to build an arena in Alpharetta and all that. Houston, you have the Toyota Center ready to go. I think that there's a good chance that if this vote fails in Arizona, we'll see a very quick pivot and rumors start to populate very quickly that the team is going to move to Houston within a year or so.
Yeah, I would say on that note, outside of Quebec City or Halifax, for example, the Houston turnaround from getting a team on the ice in the market where they would be playing full-time is the quickest, as well as the money involved with Tillman Fertitta or whatever.
Fertitta wants to rent the building. He doesn't want to own the team, but he has no problem having an NHL club playing there. Why wouldn't you? It's more revenue for him. I think that they know enough. Let's put it this way. The NHL has sent out enough feelers, enough underneath the table moves. They know that if they have to move the Coyotes to Houston by the end of 2024/2025, they can do that and not have any pushback or issue. I think they want to set themselves up as a fail-safe, similar to Atlanta and Winnipeg.
Last thing on the business of hockey, ESPN reportedly doing a 30-for-30 on the Vancouver Cup riots. What is your reaction to that? I believe 2010 was that year.
For what was that? The Vancouver Cup riots? Yeah, 2010. Yes. After Boston beats Vancouver in Game 7, they burn the city. Very famous photo of that couple kissing while
Vancouver making out in the street. Yep.
Yep, just casual things. ESPN's doing a 30-for-30 on that. That'll be fun.
Kind of cool. And then last thing I want to touch real quick. I think people know where this podcast stands as far as Pride Night goes.
Correct.
I'd wear the jersey. I think NRD would wear the jersey. I have no problem doing that. That is a hot topic in the NHL as of late. I don't think we want to get into the politics of that thing, but there's an avenue that you do want to get into, NRD. Why don't you explain that?
Yeah, so we could talk about, players' decisions and why they're the wrong ones. Some people believe they're the right ones and whatever's just to them. But I think the best thing to come out of this Pride Night fiasco, because it's a fiasco for the league and for, is Eric and Mark Stahl in Florida saying that they're not going to wear it, citing their Christian beliefs, saying that they don't, they believe everybody has the right to be involved in the game, but that they're not going to wear the jersey. They're not going to represent something that they don't believe in. Now, Eric Staal wore the Pride Night jersey in Montreal last year. And when asked slash confronted with the fact that he wore the jersey, he said, no, he didn't. And that wasn't him. And he doesn't recall wearing the Pride Night jersey last season. There is visual evidence. There is video evidence of him warming up the Pride Night jersey. Just bizarre. Don't know where he's going with that.
That's not me.
There might be a fifth Staal brother. That could have been the fifth Staal brother.
Would you be surprised?
Not at this point.
I'm not surprised by anything. Lastly, congratulations to Jared Bednar on his contract extension in Colorado, making the playoffs again. Well, 99% chance they make the playoffs again after kind of a middling season where we're like, ooh, is Colorado okay? Yeah, they're fine. They're fine. They're getting healthy, and we'll see them in the playoffs for sure. One of those guys that I think we said when we initially started this podcast, like, is he equipped for this team? Does he feel too much like a rebuild guy? And now he's got a Stanley Cup. So Jared Bednar making me eat crow once again. NRD, that's going to do it for us today on the Cold Stove Podcast. Anything else before we bounce?
Nope, happy to be back. We'll figure out what the next couple of weeks is going to look like for the show, I would assume. We will be back for the playoffs.
And no doubt.
We have one guest that I know will come on, and it'll be a fun one, hopefully. So
beautiful. We are Cold Stove Podcast at Cold Stove Pod on Twitter and Instagram. I am Brett Merriman at Schmerriman on both those platforms. That's NRD, NHL Rumors Daily on Twitter. You're not going anywhere, last time I checked, right?
Not leaving. Maybe I spoke out of my ass when I said there wasn't going to be a cottage trip after the deadline, because maybe there has been a little bit of a summer cottage trip, but we're not leaving. We'll be there.
We're not leaving. All right, buddy. Thank you. Thank you guys. Cold Stove listeners. We'll check back in with you. Maybe not next week, but definitely before the playoffs get ripping here.